Do you think you're capable of killing your worst enemy? What about your best friends? Welcome to Crime Soup Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
Well, that was jarring.
But in like a cringe way?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm scared.
Well, buckle up, Buttercup. Because we're about to discuss Finland's most infamous cold case, the Lake Boda murders. Welcome to Crime Soup Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
And I'm Hannah.
And this week we'll be discussing Finland's most infamous cold case, the Lake Boda murders. On June 5th, 1960, four teenagers set out on a camping adventure at a beautiful lake in Finland's second largest city, Espoo. This is only about 19 kilometers, or 11 miles, outside of Finland's largest city, Helsinki. The group was comprised of two sets of couples, 15-year-old Mela Borklund with her 18-year-old boyfriend Nils Gustafsson, and 15-year-old Anya Mackey with her 18-year-old boyfriend Seppo Boisman. The boys, Nils and Seppo, worked together in a metal workshop. That's how they knew each other. And so they were graduated from high school.
Yeah, they're working.
Yeah, working men at this point. And Mela and Anya knew each other from school. The couples spent the day exploring and riding around on the boys' motorcycles, but toward the end of the day, they made their way to their campsite at Lake Bodum. They fished and swam at their campsite. There's an excerpt from Mela's journal just a few hours before the murders took place, and here's what she wrote. Fifth day camping at Lake Bodum. Seppo and Nils were drunk. Up at 2 a.m., Seppo was fishing.
Fifth day? They were there that long?
No, I think she was just saying the 5th of June.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mela and Anya went to bed a few hours before the boys, and the boys stayed up fishing and talking. When they were done, they both went inside the tent with the girls. The following morning, around 6 a.m. on June 6th, two young boys on a bird-watching expedition were walking beside Lake Bodum when they noticed a campsite with a tent that was torn and collapsed, although they noted that they didn't pay attention to any other details. They also noted that a blonde-haired man was walking away from the tent. The two young boys didn't think much of it and continued on their expedition. Fatal mistake.
Okay, so they're up till 2, and then only 4 hours later, two young boys are birdwatching, and they notice that the tent was torn and collapsed.
Yes, but they didn't really pay any close attention to details. They were mostly interested in the motorcycles they saw at the campsite.
Okay.
So they were like, ooh, motorcycles, let's look. And they kind of noticed the tent, but they didn't get close to the motorcycles or tent because they're mostly on a birdwatching expedition. But the motorcycles are what kind of drew them in.
And they for sure see a blonde-haired man walking away from their tents.
Yes.
So are the four of them all sharing one tent?
Yes. All four of them are in the same tent.
Okay.
Around 11 a.m., a man and his son made their way to the lake, hoping to enjoy a summer swim. However, the collapsed tent caught the man's eye, and when he went to investigate, he found the brutally murdered bodies of the four teenagers. The man and his son immediately fled to get help, and right after they left, another man was jogging by the lakeside and found the crime scene. He also fled to alert the police. The police didn't arrive until an hour later, and when the police arrived, they found the battered bodies of Mela and Nils on top of the torn and bloodied tent. Mela was nude from the waist down and had been stabbed and beaten with a blunt object. Anya and Seppo were underneath the tent, also stabbed, beaten with a blunt object, and deceased, but it was obvious that Mela sustained the most brutal injuries out of the victims. Nils had brain fluid leaking from his nose, his teeth were visible from a gash on his cheek, and he also sustained stab wounds to his torso, but he was, to everyone's surprise, alive.
What?
Yes. Nils was immediately transported to a nearby hospital while investigators studied the crime scene. They determined that the ropes propping the tent up had been cut, and the assailants stabbed and bludgeoned the victims blindly from the outside of the tent.
This is really weird.
Which is weird. Who does that, right? That seems strange. Well, the whole thing is strange. Why would you... Yeah. The police searched the area, and they didn't find the murder weapons, but they did find some strange things. Seppo and Nils' motorcycles were at the campsite, but the keys were nowhere to be found. Some clothing and the kids' wallets were also missing. Nils' shoes were also missing, but they were later found about 500 meters, or like 1,600 feet, from the campsite, along with some of his clothes. Police also found bloody shoe prints around and leading away from the campsite that they later would find matched Nils' shoe print. After doing a less than thorough job securing the crime scene and hunting for evidence, the police called upon the public to help in the search for evidence. Hold on. Before I go into that, should we recap that? And do you have any questions?
I mean, that was a lot.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep the injuries and their names together. So who was the survivor?
Nils.
But he had brain fluid leaking from his nose.
Yes.
And it was his shoes that were found like 500 meters away?
Yes. His shoes and some of his clothes were found about 500 meters away.
Okay, because immediately, since he was the survivor, I felt suspicious of, like, well, maybe he killed his friends? But how did he injure himself that bad? That doesn't make sense. And then I also was like, oh, well, maybe, you know, when you're camping, you, like, leave your shoes outside the tent. Maybe the killer put on his shoes, but why would he do that?
That feels unnecessary and like a time waster.
I mean, it makes sense if he wants to conceal his size feet, or he wants to conceal what shoes he owns. But he would have gone to the scene not knowing that there would be shoes there waiting for him. Why would he be like, oh, this is a good idea. Before I stab all these people, why don't I slip off my loafers and put on these ones?
It doesn't really make any sense.
Okay, but is it possible, though, that the footprints that matched Nils' shoes were just there from him walking around because they were staying there?
They were bloody footprints. Specifically.
That matched his shoes.
Yes. And his shoes had blood on them.
Oh. I was going to say, is it possible that the killer just happens to own the same pair of shoes and is the same size?
No. So I'll tell you this now then. The shoes, Nils' shoes were found a little bit away with some of his clothes. And I think they later found the motorcycle keys and the wallets with those clothes as well. But Nils' shoes had the blood from all three of the deceased victims.
Okay.
But not his.
And only one of the girls was sexually assaulted.
Actually, no.
But she was found naked from the waist down?
Yes.
So they think that maybe she was already naked when he attacked?
They're not sure. Let me talk about some of the evidence.
Okay.
So the police did less than a thorough job securing the crime scene and actually hunting for evidence. And then they asked the public to help aid in the search for evidence. So out came the public, and they tromped over the crime scene and subsequently destroyed any and all evidence. Literally, they were like touching everything and disturbing the area. And they were searching for the murder weapons is what the police asked for help in. But they destroyed most of the evidence in that area. Like, holy crap, that seems so dumb. But I was looking into it a little bit more, and it seems like the little towns surrounding Lake Bodum were really small villages, and the people were really kind of tight-knit. And so I wonder if the police force was more of like a collaborative thing. Like, so they really didn't have a large police presence or police department or anything like that. And so the public helped with a lot of other types of things is what I was seeing. Like, they worked together, and that's just how their communities worked.
So it's like the local police who were doing this investigation. Exactly. I feel like that doesn't make that much sense. If you've got like a quadruple homicide, or I guess Nils is still alive, so a triple homicide, why wouldn't they just import experienced police from the larger cities to do this investigation?
They realized that a little bit too late. So after a few days, when they discovered the bloody footprints, they were like, oh shit. Like, there was like evidence here that we didn't see, and it's kind of been ruined. So after a few days, they realized that, and they called in the military, the country's military, to come in and help search for evidence. So they brought like dogs and the fanciest equipment that they had at the time to help search for evidence. But by the time they realized their mistake, it was too late. The search was in vain. So they relied on the autopsies to tell them more information. They were really hoping the autopsies would give them a little bit more information as to what happened. But nothing besides the obvious was discovered, sadly. So Anya and Seppo were determined to have died by blunt force trauma, but they also suffered some stab wounds. Mela also died from blunt force trauma, but she suffered much more stab wounds than her peers, and most of the stab wounds were sustained post-mortem. So this is overkill. And you know that that doesn't really happen outside of like intimate relationships, not necessarily just with like a partner, but like with somebody you know. It's not common for murderers to target random victims with this much violence and anger. And Mela was naked from the waist down, but the autopsy determined that there was no sign of sexual assault. That doesn't mean that it didn't happen, but the autopsy just didn't find obvious evidence of it. Nils was questioned, but he didn't remember much. He said he remembered that he was attacked first and that his attacker was wearing all black and had glowing red eyes.
What?
Yeah. Like, kind of paranormal. Kind of weird.
Kind of?
Yeah.
Was this Mothman?
I didn't know Mothman lived in Finland too.
Oh my God! When was the Mothman sightings?
I don't know. Actually,
killed by Mothman.
So the police were frustrated with the amount of information that Nils had. He didn't have a ton of information, and they asked him to undergo hypnotherapy to see if he could provide any more information.
The Mothman sightings were 1966, so 6 years after.
You think Mothman wasn't like actively going on when in the 60s? Though, come on. Like early 60s.
He started in Finland and then he made his way over to America.
Exactly. The Americans were the only ones crazy enough to actually believe it. So that's why he came here.
Sorry, continue.
But anyway.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Just one more thing though.
Okay.
Did Nils not think that that was a really weird thing to say?
I don't know. Did he?
I want to know if he was like embarrassed to say it or if he was like, I know what I saw and he had glowing red eyes. Was it an albino? Don't they have pink eyes?
Oh my God.
He is not doing good for his credibility. Like, if I was the police taking that report, I'd be like, red eyes.
Like, come again?
Okay.
Yeah.
Nils. But he also has brain fluid leaking. Yes, no.
Exactly. He had a severe concussion. Oh my God. The snort. You gotta cut him some fucking slack, Hannah.
I shouldn't be bullying this poor boy, but I don't know how much of his story I can believe. Okay.
I know, and that's fair. And that's why the police asked him to undergo hypnotherapy.
Okay. Hypnotherapy.
So he went under hypnotherapy, and he was able to give a description of the attacker under hypnosis. So that's, I don't think that's really credible, especially in the fucking 60s. Like, I don't trust hypnotherapy today. I definitely don't trust it from the 60s.
And the police are, like, instigating this? Like,
yes.
The police are using hypnotherapy?
I don't think they're doing it. I think they had an expert come in, but they wanted the results of the hypnotherapy sessions to see if Nils's subconscious could remember anything.
Okay.
And from these hypnotherapy sessions, Nils was able to recreate an image that he remembered of the person. And so the police did a composite sketch of this person. And it's absolutely terrifying.
And it was him?
No. Let me send you this picture. Hold on.
Okay. This seems so hokey to me. I'm sorry. I don't have a ton of faith in hypnotherapy. So, like, I'd just be worried that the person in his subconscious might be, because he has brain damage, right?
Oh, of course.
He has, like, physical brain damage. What if the person he describes is just, like, one of the cashiers at the grocery store he saw that day, or it's just, like, his mom or something?
His mom? Is his mom a villain?
I don't know. Because think about whenever you have like a weird dream and you're like, why was the person sat next to in middle school in my dream last night? I didn't even know that they even existed in my brain, right? Like your brain has all sorts of weird people in there that it just pulls out randomly.
Oh, 100%. That's why I think hypnotherapy is dangerous.
Oh my gosh!
You scared the shit out of me!
I just got the picture you sent me. This man is terrifying! I scared you. You scared me. This man looks like something that should live in the deep ocean. He looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh my God!
Is he not scary to you?
Oh no, he's terrifying to me. Why in the fuck does he look like that? I have so many questions.
Is this what people in Finland look like? I've never been. I thought they were beautiful. This man is not beautiful.
Well, he was obviously Mothman. So Mothman isn't Finnish, so he's not beautiful.
Okay, so first of all, his eyes are enormous.
Yes. Like
his
non-human.
He's got like a receding hairline. He looks old.
And
like,
he's blonde. You can tell he's blonde.
It looks gray. I mean, it's a black and white picture, so it looks gray. So is he insinuating that this man is young enough to not have gray hair?
No. Nils described the man as blonde.
Yeah, but he looks really old. Like, someone with this many wrinkles. Like, he looks like he's at least, what, 55, 60 years old?
No. See, I saw this picture and I just saw, like, a haggardly looking 40-year-old.
Oh, okay. He's got a lot of wrinkles and it specifically looks like he has liver spots.
Like a tortured looking 40-year-old.
And then does he have like pockmarks on his cheeks?
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Okay. And really big lips. Like those are, I wonder if those are just over dramatized.
I mean, you know, like whenever you see a police sketch and like the assailant or perpetrator that it was supposed to look like, it's always a little bit exaggerated in some ways, kind of like a caricature picture.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I wonder if his eyes were really that big, or if his lips were really that big, or if his wrinkles were really that bad, or if they were just trying to emphasize these important features on his face.
I wish you had warned me before sending me this picture, because I'm going to have... Oh, that was terrifying.
Well, it gets worse, because I have another picture to show you later that you're going to absolutely shit yourself. But I'll warn you this time.
Okay.
I'll warn you.
It's worse than this?
It's worse.
Oh, God.
It's worse. 100% worse. So immediately the town had a list of suspects that they asked the police to look into. Number one, Pentti Sonnenen. Pentti Sonnenen was in a Finnish prison in the mid-1960s, a few years after the murders, when authorities heard him brag to other inmates that he was responsible for the Lake Bodom murders. Obviously, this got their attention, especially because he did live near the lake at the time of the murders. But it should be noted that he was only 14 at the time these took place. So what are the odds that a 14-year-old could overpower four teenagers? Two of which were 18 years old.
Have you ever met a 14-year-old? They can be scary.
Yeah, my little brother is 14 right now.
They're surprisingly strong and rage-filled.
But also a little bit dumb. No offense.
Yeah.
But it all hinges on whether or not he is a 14-year-old, had the capacity to do this. And I mean, I guess the killer did surprise the victims while they slept. Is that like enough of a leg up, in your opinion?
I would think so. If you're like drowsy and it doesn't take that long to...
My only thing is there are four of them. So if he just started like wildly stabbing and bludgeoning through the tent, like they were awake and probably trying to fight back.
Here's what I want to know. Here's something that doesn't add up. Is I get the idea of the killer blindly was stabbing and bludgeoning. But did the killer know how many people were in the tent before he started doing that?
No idea.
Which would mean that if he did know and it was a calculated attack, like he knew how many people he's going up against. One, that's brave, because like you said, four people. But two, it makes me think that he had been lurking around the area beforehand and like knew who he was going up against.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe even knew that they had been drinking, right? Hadn't they been drinking?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the other thing, is that he's not attacking four fully functioning adults. He's attacking two sleeping 15-year-old girls and two 18-year-old boys who have been drinking. So they might still be inebriated, right? Because they're up until 2 and the attack happened sometime before 6.
Yeah.
So they still got a high blood alcohol content, probably.
Potentially, yeah. No, that's a good point. There was a lack of evidence putting him at the scene, but we also know that the evidence was absolutely decimated by the public. So it's possible that it was just destroyed if he was there. But something that was interesting is that he was described by police as a psychopathic character, but police didn't feel that his confession held much weight, even though his criminal record included violent criminal assault, theft, and robbery. Is it more likely that this violent child was just able to walk through the crime scene after the killings took place and drew inspiration from it in some sick way and was trying to get street cred by bragging about it in prison?
Because it was a famous murder, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Any more thoughts before we go on to suspect number two?
No. Who's suspect number two?
Suspect number two is Carr Valdemar Gilstrom. He's a local kiosk owner who hated campers and kids with a violent passion. Like, for no fucking reason. Literally, he was like the town villain. Everybody first was like, oh, it's this guy. Police, look into Carl, right?
Because he's a grouchy old man.
Yeah, he had been known to, like, throw rocks at people and verbally harass tourists. And he even destroyed people's property, like their cars and their stuff. Okay, and this is the most unhinged shit I've ever heard. He put razor blades in people's apples just for the fun of it. Police knew at this point that the killer had been wearing Nils's shoes, just from the, I guess, that blood spatter evidence on the shoes.
And which is really unhinged. Something that someone like Carl would do.
Razor blades and apples and shit like that. So they had Carl try on the boy's shoes, and they were a perfect fit, which is weird.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I'm still stuck on this. So the police believe that the killer came to the campsite with the intention of murdering these kids, took off his shoes, put on Nils' shoes, bludgeoned them to death, ran off with his shoes in his hands, abandoned Nils' shoes 500 meters away, put his shoes back on, and then left?
But also stole the motorcycle keys and all of the kids' wallets and some of Nils' clothes and planted them all together.
So is that something that, like, he took off the bodies after he'd killed them? Like, he killed them all and then he stole their wallets?
Yes. And this just doesn't make any sense to me, because why would you... This is what I feel like the police are thinking right now. I feel like they're like, this is really suspicious, and we think it's Nils, but we don't want to think it's Nils, because who the fuck would do that? And that's so unhinged, and there's no motive that we can see.
Because he was the survivor.
Exactly. So we're going to look into everyone else first to see if there's any other suspects here.
And it turns out that this town is full of sitcom characters.
Yeah, so Carl was a hot-headed alcoholic, and he was abusive towards his wife and children, and everybody knew it. The public specifically asked police to look into him. And police looked in on his property, they searched his property, and discovered that Carl had recently filled a well on his property with dirt. And everyone was convinced that he had hid evidence in this well. I guess police searched the covered well, but they didn't find any evidence. But Carl's son-in-law was absolutely convinced. Like, he was going to die on the hill that Carl hid evidence in that well. Years and years after, he was like, Carl hid the evidence in that well, even though police never found anything. So Carl's wife was questioned and supplied police with an alibi. She said that Carl had been with her on the night of the murders, but we do know, and I've talked about this before in previous episodes, when a wife or spouse who's being abused will lie to police to give their abuser an alibi out of fear, right?
Yeah, that happened in Rita Curran's case.
Exactly. This is where, like, a few years after, like, I think 6 years after the murders, because Carl was looked into immediately after, and there was no, like, overwhelming evidence.
He's just a weird guy.
He's just a weird guy, and they couldn't pin anything on him, so nothing ever came of it. But a few years after, like 6 years after, Carl drowned himself in Lake Bodum and wrote a suicide note confessing to the murders.
What?
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to feel about it because of everything else. So this... It's unhinged, because why would he do that? And then when Carl's wife was on her deathbed, she admitted that she lied about Carl's alibi and that Carl had threatened to kill her if she told the truth about him not being there on the night of the Lake Bodum murders.
Okay.
So everything about this is like, holy shit, it must have been Carl, right? It had to have been Carl. He confessed.
Are you?
He committed suicide. His wife admitted on her deathbed that she lied about an alibi. That's it. Closed case, right?
Wrong. No, but you're going to tell me something even crazier.
Yes. I'm going to tell you about suspect number three, Hans Asman. Okay, so suspect number three is Hans Asman. He was from the area, but he moved away for a while, and he was rumored to be a prison guard at Auschwitz. And his sister actually did prove after he died that he belonged to an aerial warfare branch, Luftwanda, in World War II. I don't really know what that is.
Luftwaffe? Isn't that the German Air Force?
Yes, yes. I think he was a German officer in World War II, but was captured by the Soviets. Became a Soviet prisoner of war, turned KGB spy.
Okay.
And then he moved back to Finland after this, after the war was over.
And he lived a few miles from the crime scene.
And he was kind of a hermit, a recluse. People were scared of him. He wasn't like a nice guy. He was a creepy guy. But the story gets weird because on the morning of the murders, Hans appeared at the Helsinki hospital acting really suspicious. His clothes were covered in blood and dirt. He was pretending to be unconscious and he was yelling at the staff. And he fit the description of the blonde-haired man. I'm going to send you a picture of him. Trigger oh, no. warning because of the way he looks.
Trigger warning, ugly man.
Terrifying looking man.
Wish we got those in real life. That is the man.
He looks exactly like the police sketch. Does he not?
Identical. There is no doubt in my mind that this is the same man from the police sketch.
The creepiest picture to me, I can't decide if it's the head-on picture or the picture from further back where it's showing where it's showing his whole body if you zoom in on his face.
That is the scariest thing I have ever seen. This man has definitely murdered someone.
He was a Nazi and a KGB spy.
I believe it, yeah.
And he looks it. But yeah, so he showed up to the hospital covered in blood and dirt and was like pretending to pass out, yelling at people for not doing what he wanted them to do. Like, so he fit the description. He was blonde. He looked like the composite sketch.
I'm sorry. Okay, but this man, I thought spies were supposed to be like really inconspicuous looking. Like, aren't they supposed to be really bland looking people that blend in? This man does not blend in. He looks like a lizard person.
Well, back in the 40s, they wanted spies to look terrifying, I guess.
I can't tell if he's 20 or 70.
And maybe that's why the composite sketch is so on point.
That's why he made a good spy. People are like, is that a man? How old is he?
Is this a lizard person? Is he a human? But the weirdest part was police immediately took interest in this, obviously. But like later that same day, they ruled him out. They said, this man is fine. He didn't do it. But they never told us what his alibi was. Like they said, this man didn't do it. They ruled him out as a suspect.
Okay, hold on. Let me make sure I have this right. So Hans Asman.
Yes.
Spontaneously moved back to Finland that same year.
Yes.
And people were like, he's really weird. He's a hermit. And rumors are that he was a prisoner of war, right?
And a KGB spy.
And a KGB spy.
And a Nazi.
And then literally the same day as the murders, he showed up at a hospital in Helsinki and he was covered in dirt and blood.
Yes.
And he was putting on a pretend, like he was pretending to be unconscious. But doctors are like, why is he pretending?
Yes.
Okay. And he looks exactly like the composite sketch of the blonde-haired man that witnesses saw leaving the area of the murder, like, that morning.
Yes. You pretty much got it. The police interviewed him, and then they, immediately after interviewing him, said that this man had an alibi, and he's no longer a suspect.
Are we going to get an explanation for why he was covered in dirt and blood?
No. The police did say that the blood was his own, but they didn't elaborate on like what happened, how it happened, why he was acting so weird. Like,
but he has the exact same shoe size as Nils.
No, we don't know that.
I thought you said that his shoes were a perfect fit.
No, that was Carl.
Oh, sorry.
Mixing up
I'm getting all my creepy men mixed up.
Exactly. But yeah, so they never stated what Hans's alibi was or why he was covered in blood. But there's a part of me that's like, is this just because he was associated with the KGB? And they're like, we're not going to mess with this guy because we don't want to get fucked up by the KGB.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I worry that he has some sort of ties.
But we don't know. Yeah. We don't really know how that went down. But that's immediately what my mind goes to.
Or if there's Nazis in the police force.
And that is very possible. Okay, now I'm going to send you another picture because this might be the most terrifying picture of all.
What? Yeah. How does it get worse?
So a picture was taken at the teenagers' funerals. They had like a big joint funeral and a picture was snapped. And there's a man in the picture. This is a real verified picture that looks just like the composite sketch and also bears a strong resemblance to Hans. So I don't know if it's Hans. I don't know if it's a different man in the composite sketch. But it's terrifying, to be frank.
Yeah.
So I'll know when you get it because you might freak out.
No, I can see it. I mean, you've already scared me enough with that man's face. It looks like him.
It does look like him. So it might be Hans. I don't really know. Basically, people were like, this guy looks like the composite sketch picture. And it just might be Hans. And the police already ruled him out as a suspect because He has a KGB alibi.
I mean, it's not, is it terribly suspicious that Hans might be at the funeral if it's like a small town and probably everyone is going?
I guess not.
Because like, even if you're innocent, it's just like, what else is there to do on a Saturday?
I don't know.
In the 60s.
Good God.
Every person in this picture looks haggard. Even in this young man who looks like he might be 16, I think has wrinkles.
It was the 60s. People were fighting for their lives. I was also reading something that was like, Hans also chopped his hair off shortly after the police sketch was released because his hair matched the description as well. And I was like, I would too. Damn, even if I was innocent, I'd be like, I gotta change my hair so I don't look like the fucking police composite sketch of this mass murderer. He chopped his hair off after the picture was released and people were thinking that that was like a testament to his guilt and... It may or may not be.
I'm leaning more toward Hans because Carl, it's like he could have just been a little bit. He could have just had some screws loose and confessed to a crime that he didn't commit because it's
exactly.
Delusional.
Exactly.
Yeah. What? So is there anything more we need to know about Hans?
No, that's pretty much it about Hans.
Nothing happens to him. He just keeps living his life. He's not arrested or anything.
Yeah, not arrested. Keeps living his life. It's all Gucci on the Hans front. Even though it's really not, because I'm still like, what is going on there? But police were like, no, it's fine. Everything's cool. Don't worry about it. Hans is great. But I do not trust that because this man was Nazi and KGB. So it was not great.
I like to think that if I showed up to a hospital acting crazy and I was covered in dirt and blood the day of a triple homicide, that people would look into me.
Oh, they absolutely would.
Okay. Are there any more suspects?
Yes. The fourth and final suspect is Niels Gustafsson.
Nils.
What did I say? I'll say that again. The fourth...
No. You didn't say it wrong. I'm just saying like the Nils, like the guy with the brain fluid.
Yes. The Nils, the lone survivor of the massacre. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But he wasn't officially charged until 44 years after the murders. He was arrested.
Like 2004?
Yes, he was arrested for the murders of his friends at Lake Bodum in 2004. So the entire country of Finland has just a single forensics lab serving its entire country. So it didn't have a ton of bandwidth to turn its attention to old investigations. And the Lake Bodum murders weren't revisited until 2004. And that's when a fresh look at Gustafsson's shoes became the focal point of a new round of accusations. So forensic evidence on his shoes definitively proved that the killer was wearing Nils's shoes. So there's either two options. Nils did it, or whoever killed the teenagers put on Nils's shoes for some unknown reason. And they had already visited that like 44 years prior, but it just became more and more unreasonable to assume that the person who killed them put on Nils's shoes and also took some of Nils's clothes and the motorcycle keys and the wallets to the same location and stashed them. Like, it just became kind of hard to ignore how strange that was and how much that pointed to the involvement of Nils in this, right? But I don't know exactly what the forensic evidence on the shoes mean. Like, the blood spatter on the shoes is consistent with the ways that Mela, Anya, and Seppo died, but there's no blood spatter consistent with Nils's injuries. Like, I'm not 100% sure exactly what that looked like. I can't really find anything. But
do they know
think?
How did he end up getting injured? They're assuming that he did it to himself?
Yes. So the prosecution built a case against Nils by bringing in an eyewitness from that night who claimed to have heard Nils and Seppo drunkenly arguing about something. So the eyewitness came forward after 45 years when a documentary on this, on the Lake Bodum murders, were being made. And she claimed that the boys came over to her campsite and were drunk and aggressive. But again, there's no like real evidence to corroborate this. It's just an eyewitness statement. But either way, the prosecutors tried to say that Nils was compelled to kill his friends out of drunken jealousy because he wanted to sleep with either Mela or Anya. I really do not know exactly how they reconstructed this. They basically reconstructed it as Seppo and Nils stayed up late. They were fishing. They got into an argument about Mela and Anya and how Nils wanted to sleep with them. Seppo got jealous. They started fighting. They got into a fight and Seppo kicked Nils's ass, essentially. And
that explains some of his injuries, is that he got into a physical altercation with his friend.
Yes. And Seppo went to bed but Nils stayed up a little bit later and kind of planned it. And then he attacked them while they were sleeping in their tent, ditched his shoes and some clothes and their stuff. Either before or after, he had his shoes on while he was killing them, presumably, but then ditched his shoes with his other stuff that he had stashed 500 meters away. And then, because he got hurt pretty bad fighting Seppo, and then probably fighting Seppo and the girls again while he was killing them, he sustained more injuries and kind of just laid on top of the tent next to Mela.
Okay. I mean, that it makes sense, but it's also just really weird.
It is really weird, but all of it's really weird. Literally, yeah. Every single suspect, every single theory they have is kind of insane.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. Same.
So essentially, he was arrested and he was convicted?
He was convicted. So in 2004, after the trial, Nils was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. But a year later, in 2005, he was acquitted of all charges. And the Finnish government actually paid him like a lump of money for his pain and suffering to have to relive the trials after he was acquitted.
Because what did they really have? Like, they have a nice story and they can kind of piece it together and explain it. But what do they actually have physically to prove that he did it? Like, I'm surprised that he was convicted.
Just the shoes, pretty much. And even then, that's not an awesome thing to build the case around because it's so, like, the evidence was destroyed. So much evidence was destroyed, and they only have the shoes. And even then, they only have, like, a teeny tiny bit of the story with the shoes. So they had to create this whole scenario surrounding what they think might have happened.
Because what they're insinuating is that Nils and his girlfriend go camping with his buddy and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
The girls go to bed. He and Seppo stay up late and they get into such a physical altercation. Well, do you think he sustained like the brain injury during the attack or from Seppo?
He could have gotten a concussion. And like he had broken facial bones and a concussion and a gash on his cheek. And some superficial stab wounds as well.
It just seems weird that Seppo would get into such a huge fight with his friend and then be like, okay, I'm gonna go to bed now. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if he kicked the shit out of Nils, maybe. He was like, this is over. Go to bed. Like, walk it off, bro. You're drunk.
Yeah, maybe. You're saying that he attacked them, bludgeoned, knifed them to death, and then he just lay down with their corpses and was like, I gotta lay down and pretend like I'm a victim and hope that someone finds us sometime soon.
Yeah. I mean, and he was beaten pretty bad, so maybe, like, he had a concussion, he was...
What does it take for brain fluid to leak out your nose?
That's a good question, let me look it up.
But, also, I guess it does make sense that, Wait, so the composite sketch of the man, did that come from Nils?
Yes, it did come from Nils.
Okay, so maybe Nils just knew Hans from around town and was like, that's a scary looking guy. And so when police were like, hey, can you describe him? He's like, and then just started describing Hans because he'd seen him before.
Or maybe they went to this area all the time. Like, I have no idea if they commonly went to Lake Bodum and hung out because it is a really beautiful place and they...
Sorry, but that composite sketch is Hans. Like, you look at that face and you look at Hans. So then that begs the question of how did Nils get a picture or an image of Hans in his head? If he wasn't familiar with Lake Bodum, he hadn't been there before, he didn't spend a lot of time there, how would he know Hans?
The only explanation is that he didn't know Hans, and that's the first time he saw them. He's telling the truth. Or he went to this place regularly enough that he kind of knew. That he had seen him before, at the very least.
So, if we go based on the theory that Nils is guilty, he ditched all of his stuff and the motorcycle keys and their wallets and stuff to just make it look like they had been robbed?
Maybe.
Because where were the keys and the wallet found?
With his clothes and shoes.
That doesn't make sense. If someone was going to go through the trouble of trying to kill four people and rob them, why did they abandon all of the money and the keys and the motorcycles?
Exactly. So I looked up what causes brain fluid to leak from your nose, and it's certain head, brain, or spinal injuries. So the concussion could have caused it.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Who do you think is responsible? You think Nils did it? You think Hans did it? You think crazy Carl did it?
I don't think Carl did it. I think either Hans or Nils did, and I lean more toward Nils. Specifically because of the overkill on his girlfriend and the shoes is just kind of impossible to ignore. It's really weird that somebody would put on his shoes and do the murders and then move the shoes, right? And then also the stuff was stashed with his clean clothes, Like, he was planning on getting, like, leaving, but maybe realized, holy shit, I'm going to be blamed for this. In my heart of hearts, I want to say it's Nils. That's what I believe. But I don't know if that's...
Because who else has motive?
Like, exactly.
I know Carl is crazy and Hans is weird, but like...
why? Why would they do that?
Like, unless they are just complete psychopaths, which... More often than not, that's not the case. Like, the chances of just a psychopath wandering into your campground and killing you are pretty low, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy, like, to attack four people when there were other people camping there. Like,
it makes sense that whoever killed them was someone who knew what they were up against. They knew the situation. They knew who was in the tent. Nils knew that they were sleeping, that they were inebriated, and he has motive, supposedly, because he was fighting with Seppo. And he's the lone survivor, and it was his shoes, and his stuff wasn't taken. Yeah, it sounds like he tried to stage it as a robbery, but didn't really think it all the way through.
Yep. Well, he still got away with it. He's a free man.
Because now he's been acquitted.
Yeah, he was acquitted. We do not know, and the murder weapons have never been found, never been recovered.
I mean, weren't they right by a lake?
Yeah. And it's possible that he just used a rock, right?
Like
he
just a said knife, it was like a blunt object.
Yeah, like a knife and a rock, and it would be easy to lose those things in a lake.
What a horrible story!
Yeah, 0 out of 10 would not recommend.
But here we are talking about.
But here we are. Maybe you listen to it and think the same thing.
That is so dissatisfying.
I know. I'm sorry. It wasn't Mothman. There's no other definitive leads. It's just cold case.
Oh, gosh. I'm really curious to hear what everyone else's thoughts and theories are, because I'm just dumbstruck. Like,
do you think it was Nils?
Yes, I do think it was Nils. And it really does come down to the shoes, because as soon as you said in the beginning that his shoes were found bloody, I'm like, there ain't no way that some killer was like, oh, gonna take off my shoes, put on Nils' shoes. Like, no.
These are pretty nifty.
No! These are pretty nifty. Absolutely. Like, it's little things like that I catch myself getting stuck on. Like, remember Debbie Grabber's case? I was like, that book was found with her body.
Yeah.
And I could not let go.
Yep.
It's little things like that that killers, they don't think about. Little clues like that stick with me and they bother me. And the shoes in this case, I'm like, no. A killer did not put on Nils' shoes. I'm sorry.
Well, I almost think, like... Nils might have tried to dip out and leave, right? And he had a fresh set of clothes that he was going to change into that was stashed with the motorcycle keys and the wallets, and then realized the only choice was to be a victim as well. Like,
to just, yeah, lay down and pretend.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like we need to have a whole nother episode just about Hans and answers as to why he was covered in blood and dirt and why he was at the hospital. On the same day as a triple homicide.
The police said that the blood was his own.
Okay, so he was just out farming and...
Chopped off a finger? I don't know.
Okay, maybe it's not as suspicious. Maybe they cleared him because they're like, oh, it was just a dumb accident.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This was Hans's alibi. Holy shit, this was Hans's alibi. He had been cheating on his wife at the time. He spent the night with his lover. And the two were not alone in the house, with multiple witnesses confirming he had been present and never left the residence. And witnesses said that he could not have left the house without being seen.
Because he's so ugly.
How does he have a lover?
How does he have two lovers?
Imagine being cheated on by a man that looks like a cryptid. Like, I would end it. I'd be like, that's it. That's fucking it. I'm out.
Why is it always the ugliest men that cheat? I swear to God. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and it's because of insecurity. It's 100% because of insecurity.
Lee, I'm sorry. He does not deserve any of those women.
No, he doesn't. And it's... Okay, so it says here that Hans liked... Like, he enjoyed the infamy. He enjoyed the attention that he got from people speculating that he was the murderer. Oh. Which, gross. Oh my God. Okay, so I have Hans's life story. Do you want to read it?
Yes.
Oh my fucking God. Okay, are you ready for the most wild shit you've ever heard?
Dude, no.
This is Hans Asman's life story, okay? Suspect number two?
Three.
Suspect number three's life story. So the theory that Hans was involved was made popular with a book published by the doctor who treated him the morning of the Lake Bodum murders, Professor Jorma Paulo. And that book series turned Hans into a one-man, like a sensational one-man crime wave. And Hans loved the infamy that he received, like the attention that he received. By 1997, he was an alcoholic and nearing death and decided to tell his life story to Matti Pallero, a former police officer and then editor of the Finnish true crime magazine Alibi. Hans revealed how he had been a member of the SS and served as a concentration camp guard at Auschwitz during the war. And during his time at the camp, he fell in love with a Jewish girl and became disillusioned with life as a Nazi. When his liaison with the girl was discovered, he was sent to the Eastern Front to fight the advancing Soviets. There, he was captured and quickly turned, becoming a KGB agent. He seemingly confessed to being involved in the 1953 murder of Kaliki Saari, where a young woman was apparently kidnapped while bicycling home, her body being buried in a local swamp. Hansman indicated that it hadn't been a murder at all and that his chauffeur had accidentally hit the girl with their car, and claiming to have been a KGB agent at the time, Hans feared that their actual reason for being in the area would be revealed, and the duo staged the case as a murder. Hans's ex-wife, Vienna Osman, reported that he had been close to somebody named Iso Joki at the time of Kaliki's disappearance, and the suspect was known to own a cream opal car like the one seen by a witness in Kaliki's murder. She added that there were dents in this car after that night and that one of Hans's socks was missing. A sock had been found close to the scene of Kaliki's murder and was believed to have been used as a gag. Equally, on the night of Kaliki's disappearance, his shoes had been wet, and by his ex-wife's account, a few days afterward, Hans and his driver left with a shovel. Importantly, Hans was left-handed, and police, having ascertained the killer, must have been so as well. Okay, so this makes me think it was Hans.
What?
The Lake Bodum murderer was Hans. Okay. Oh, but it gets crazier.
Why?
There's more. He killed a girl. He staged a girl as a... Okay, there's more. So Hans himself only ever gave hints and suggestions to Pallero about how much of the tale is... The truth of the tale is open to debate. And many suggested that Hans was nothing but a fanaticist. Is that the word? Fanaticist?
I don't know.
A fanatic? He just liked the attention. He did say that there was an accident that had to be covered up because their trip as KGB agents would be revealed. And even though my friend was a good driver, he said the accident was unavoidable. I assume you know what I mean. Okay, and beyond the Kaliki Saari killing, Hans was named a suspect in the Talil Ati campsite murders by Pallero on astonishingly thin evidence, primarily the fact that the case showed remarkable similarities to the Kaliki murder.
This is a different campsite murder.
A different campsite murder. The murders were brutal, with two young women, Rita Parkkinen, 23, and Ayn Nissonen, 21, being stabbed and bludgeoned to death inside their tent before being dragged away to be buried in a nearby swamp.
What year was that?
Let me look it up.
So he's been a suspect in two different campsite murders where young people were stabbed and bludgeoned to death in their tents.
Yes.
Oh, man. Now I understand why this case is so famous, because he put on Nils's shoes?
Yeah. Okay, I'm convinced that Hans did it and that he's just playing with people. He just tried to frame Nils.
I mean, he was in the KGB.
Yeah.
This is too weird. Wait, I thought you said that Carl was a fit for his shoes.
Carl was a fit for his shoes, but because Hans had an alibi, I don't think they even tried on the shoes.
So what you're saying is, right now, we need to find those shoes and have like a Cinderella moment.
Hans is dead.
Exhume him.
Get these.
You
other...
pull that bitch out of the ground and you put Nils' shoes on him right now. Or I'm revolting. I want it on live TV.
The The other campsite murders took place on Saturday, July 18th, 1959, a year before the Lake Bodum murders. Almost exactly a year before.
Where was that campsite?
Let me see.
I'm making you do all this research.
They were camping in Finland. Where, though?
What does he have against campers?
Koli, a famous natural landmark in North Karelia, eastern Finland.
So wait, how did he end up suspect in that case? Here's the thing. His face is so distinct. Like, why is he running around murdering people? Like, as soon as you see a composite sketch, you're like, that is Hans.
Okay, but let's see. As with Kaliki, Rita had been killed with a heavy blow to the skull, which was covered up on burial. There may have been an element of stalking, but an opportunistic killer was likely. A grave had been dug in a bog with a shovel sourced close to the crime scene. So he stole a shovel from somewhere close to the crime scene. Also with Kaliki, the killer tried to disguise the site. The bicycles of the deceased had been hidden and submerged in both cases. It seems very possible that the killings were the work of the same individual or individuals. Multiple witnesses said they saw two men together speaking German. They reportedly purchased a map for the Tulalati campsite, and one of the two matched the description of Hans Asman. Hans had always had a chauffeur, the man who, by his own admission, had run down Kaliki Saari. Upon investigations, Hans' wife confirmed that her husband had been in the same town during the murders that he had visited, and that he had visited the area several times previously, including that same campsite where the murders took place.
Okay, but why did he kill them?
I don't know.
Because now we're back to square one, which is that just a random person who's a psychopath who just likes killing people is targeting campers.
So he's a serial killer.
I guess.
He's a serial killer. He was in the same place as these three murders that took place. Brutal murders, all relatively the same. Like, these campsite murders, he hid the bikes. Like, it's possible that he hid the clothes and the motorcycle keys and the wallets for the same reason that he hid the bikes and stuff. Like, he's trying to stage a scene to confuse police. He's playing a game.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. He's a sociopath. He just likes killing for fun. He likes to play games with police. So, here's the thing. So, he's originally from Finland?
Yes.
But how did he become a Nazi?
I don't know.
Hans Asman was a German who immigrated to Finland and then later to Sweden. Well, he was born in 1923 and he was known to live in Finland in the 1950s. Basically, he was involved in the war, and then after the war was over, he went to Finland.
There's another murder that he's connected to.
What?
Yeah. Eli Immo was murdered while walking home in 1955, and the theory has been proposed that Hans had danced with the victim on the night before her death.
According to his wives.
Yeah. His wife. Now she's an ex-wife now, but it's the same one.
Oh, it's all the same ex-wife?
Uh-huh.
Who's making all of these...
Well, they asked her, and she confirmed that where
he was. How many times was this woman approached by police about her husband being possibly involved in a murder before she's like, maybe I need a new husband?
I don't like this one anymore.
Like, the first time it's a fluke, but the second, the third, the fourth time?
Hans might just be sensationalist because he also claimed, like, he hinted at assassinating the former Minister of Trade and Industry in Germany in 1956. So he's quoted by saying, in German, this is translated, "I remember how Minister Penna Tervo cast a decisive vote in the presidential election and died 2 weeks later." Polero took this to mean that he assassinated the former Minister of Trade and Industry, who died in a car crash in 1956 with no suspicious circumstances. We know Princess Diana was killed in a car crash.
But wait, what country was that?
I think Germany.
Well, we would need to lay this all out, track down, like, was he going back and forth between Finland and Germany? Because in the 50s, he was supposed to be in Finland. How hard is it to get from Finland to Germany? Is that, like, you can take a car? I have no idea.
I have no idea.
All I know about Finland is these murders right now.
Listen, if I know nothing about this, but I bet it's easier than a drive from North California to South California. I bet the drive from Northern California to Southern California is longer than a drive from Finland to Germany.
Oh, okay, hold on. According to Google, how do you get from Finland to Germany? There is currently just one ferry route running from Finland and Germany, but it takes 30 hours.
Oh, to get from Finland to Germany?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a long time, never mind. Okay, so I'm reading on. Hans's sister went on record to say that he received a pension from the Luftwaffe. How do you say that?
Luftwaffe.
From that, meaning he was never in the SS or even at Auschwitz.
What?
Yeah. So he might be just lying. And also, for the Saari murder, I guess he was actually in Sweden at the time.
Hold on. Stop. Kaylee, so everything we know about this man is a lie?
So, yes and no. Potentially yes, potentially no. So his ex-wife was always happy to provide evidence that her former husband was always in the area when a murder was committed. But she equally claimed that he had incriminated himself in other ways, like, you know, leaving the house with a shovel after the death of Kaliki Sari. But a lot of these facts confirmed by his ex-wife need to be taken into the context that he was known to be a domestic abuser and adulterer. And he was arrested in 1961 for brutally assaulting her in public. So she, for good reason, had a fucking chip on her shoulder. He was a terrible human. They got divorced in 1970.
Okay, so he sounds like he's, what's it called? A pathological liar?
Yeah, so he might actually have done these because he admitted to all of these things kind of like on his deathbed. He didn't want to take
But so did Crazy Carl.
Exactly.
I wonder if they would have been friends.
So do like, I'm going to say something inflammatory, I guess. Do like the Slavic countries just create sociopaths? Is that why there's so many in this story?
Kaylee, you are in America.
Okay, good. I'm glad you went with this direction because it's pretty obvious they fucking do. Look at what we've done here. Look at what we've created in the United States. So this could all just be absolute bullshit because I'm sure that Hans's ex-wife absolutely truly believed these things about him because he was a villain and he was a real life villain in her life, right?
Mm-hmm. But two things can be true at the same time, which is that he could be lying about a lot of things in his life, but he could still be a killer. Like, he could have lied about being at Auschwitz. He could have lied about being in the KGB or whatever. But he could be a crazed killer.
He could be. And he was questioned in one last murder.
Another one?
Yes, and this one is legit. Like, this isn't manufactured. This isn't potentially manufactured. This is legit. Like, he was questioned by police and was the actual suspect. In 1963, he was questioned over the murder of Sirkka-Liisa Valjuus in Turku, Finland's oldest city. Valjuus was a prostitute strangled using a power cord from a lamp. So he does have a troubling history. He is a suspicious person. He did leave a wake of violence and potentially murder in his path, but did he leave all of those murders in his path? I don't know. Maybe he did wear Nils' shoes and try and like play with the crime scene to confuse police and potentially frame one of the boys as the killer, right? I'm just really suspicious of Hans now.
But you seemed so, we were so sure like 15 minutes ago that Nils was the killer.
I know.
I was not prepared for this.
No, I wasn't either, clearly. So here we are.
Our listeners are like, what a wild ride.
Whiplash is what they're getting because I got it. And I'm the one who fucking wrote this stupid episode.
10 out of 10 would do again.
Would do again and will. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Crime Suit Podcast. Be sure to find us on social media and let us know your thoughts on this case. You can find us on TikTok at Crime Suit Podcast and on Instagram and Twitter at crime_soup. We also have a website, crimesuitpodcast.com, where you can listen to all of our episodes and buy your very own Crime Suit merch. As always, we'll see you next Tuesday. Stay safe and bon appetit.